So today, continuing to talk about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and relating them as I'm trying to proceed in doing to the trees in Vrindavan, I have a couple of pictures that were taken many years ago, perhaps at least 10 years ago. So the landscape of Vrindavan has changed very much since that time. Trees have died or they have been chopped down. The local people start to cultivate the fields, and for their own reasons they alter the landscape. As you see when you go around in Vrindavan, although the residents of Braj are certainly extraordinary and cannot be understood or depreciated in the way that an ordinary person might see other people, nevertheless, as agents of Krishna's plan, they are very active in gradually making the Dharma become invisible. Practically speaking, I remember one time many years back when the Babaji, Madhava Babaji, I think his name was, who was at that time living at Vrindakund, and then he became very ill with cancer and he understood that he was soon to leave this world, so he came to the ISKCON temple asking, Krishna Balaramandir, asking if we would take over the management of Vrindakund. And he had lived there by himself for a long time, and his business at that time, he felt his inspiration for himself as a unique individual was to do something to help the landscape of Braj. But interestingly, so I decided at one point I should go and speak to him about trees, because at that time I was thinking about this possibility of writing a book. So I went to visit him, but by the time I became inspired to speak with him and went to see him, he said to me, "I'm so sorry that you didn't come earlier, because now my disease has advanced so much that I have very little energy and concentration to put into any other subject." So I asked him at that time if he would tell me anything about the trees in Vrindavan. And he told me that the first thing I should know or I should learn or memorize was the Vrindadevi Astakam, because it's Vrindadevi herself who manages all of the landscaping and the beautiful natural arrangements for the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Braj. So I understood when I was speaking with him that he was a man of much, much, much vaster devotion than anything that I could comprehend or access. And he was speaking to me and talking to me about the real Vrindavan, you could say. Whereas my eyes only saw what was visible to me. So when I was talking about trees, I wanted to know, what is this tree here? What's the name of this tree? What happened in this locality? And so on, in a very external sense. So I felt that he was talking on a different level, and I felt at first somewhat uncomfortable with him because we were not making a connection. And then I think I came off a little bit too worldly. And so then he started telling me, "You should just go to the university in Delhi and find out the species of trees and how old they are." And then I felt, no, that's a little, I didn't want to go that far. I don't want to write a book, a botanical book on trees. But I was looking for something somewhere in the middle. So then he responded in that way, and he explained to me that his service, his mood of service, his like inner mood of bhajan, you could say, or his meditation on Vrindavan, was as a servant of Vrindadevi. That was how he felt about himself. And he was highly elevated. He wasn't just thinking in a kind of a imaginary, kind of a quaint, sentimental way. He actually had a depth of realization in this matter. And he had been given insights through his own devotional advancement into what this meant. But it manifests externally as somebody who was very much concerned with how the people of Braj took care of the Drishyaman Braj. Just for example, what we can see with our eyes, there are three different aspects to the Dham. There is the Prakat Lila, when you can see Krishna's pastimes manifest, when Krishna appears in this world. There's the Aprakat Lila, when Krishna's pastimes are invisible to the eyes of those who have no bhakti, but they can still be seen through the hearts, the eyes and hearts of a transcendentalist, can perceive that Krishna's pastimes are going on constantly here. They can also perceive, in this Aprakat sense, the pastimes coming that are performed in Goloka Vrindavan, because transcendentally there is no difference between the Braj of this world and Braj in the eternal transcendental realm. They're the same entity, but in two different features. So Aprakat Lila involves that one can perceive the invisible pastimes of Krishna that are taking place even now in the Dham. And then the third feature or manifestation of the Dham is called Drishyaman. Drishyaman means basically what you can see. What you can see with earthly, maya-covered eyes. So we walk out of here and we see people, we see beggars sometimes, we see rickshaws, we see all sorts of things. This is an aspect, a feature of the Dham, but it is simultaneously isn't the Dham. This is a very mysterious subject and one that's very, very difficult to actually grasp through one's materialistic faculties, because we're so used to the material world, which is earth, water, fire, air. It's controlled by time, it's defined by space and limitations of time. If I'm here, I can't be in England. If I'm in England, I can't be in Germany. If I'm in Germany, I can't be somewhere else. But the transcendental nature of the Dham is totally different. The dimension is completely different. So time and space limit in the material sense. And given these conceptions, when we approach the holy Dham, we come up with time-space conceptualizations that are limited by these two things, which disallow us from actually entrance into the Dham. So then, according to our sincerity of heart, how much we're eager for that access, it comes through our chanting and through our hearing, not through our eyes. And what we see with our eyes, this Drishyaman Dham, this is also important. So we honor it and we use the feature of the Dham that we can see to evoke our hearing and chanting. For if this wasn't here, how would we be able to enter into the inner aspects of the transcendental Dham? So he had that access. And he was speaking on a dual level to me. But he explained that on the practical level, he had spent a lot of his time trying to plant trees, to interest the local Brajavasis in taking care of trees. He had gone all over Braj. I think he gave a phenomenal number, something like 15,000 trees he had planted in his life. Going here and there, here and there. He would go and he would encourage the local people, just water this tree. He'd almost like say, I'll give you money if you'll water this tree. And the apathy, or the apparent apathy of the people, rendered all of his work basically quite fruitless. He said the only place that he was able to grow some trees that actually remained was in a place called Radhabag, which is a garden in Radhakund. Varshana. And he said there some trees, he bought some trees. He bought a sandalwood tree, he said, from South India and told the Goswami or whoever was in charge, just grow this tree. And he said after 5 years, he said, I want to chop this down, there's no fragrance. And he said, no, it takes 15 years for the fragrance to come. Please just water this tree, let it grow. But he didn't seem at all disheartened by the fact that all the trees that he had planted had not survived. It hadn't caused him to feel sort of like bitter. He spoke about the people. He said the people here they neglect everything. They have no appreciation for the Dharma. They're not interested in taking care of it. He talked about in Govardhan how he had met one man and he had told him, please don't cut down these particular trees that are very old. And the man chopped them all down for his dowry, for his daughter. And then very soon after that, the marriage fell apart and it ended up in terrible disaster. And he was saying, I told them, I went here and there and said, don't dismantle the Dharma in this way. So he was interesting, because on one hand he was so strong in his points, and he requested us, this was myself at that time, and there was actually formed a GBC committee, which of course was intangible. I think Dinabandhu Prabhu had something to do with it, and a couple of other devotees, to go round to all the places of Braj where there were known old trees, and go to the government of India and make them all protected, and put up signs on them so that no one should chop them. And this was something that was like his life's mission, but now he was too old, and he said it would be very easy to do. And I was thinking, very easy to do, for you maybe, not so much for us. And he said, this must be done. But then when I started to criticize the people also and say, yes, they seem to be so indifferent and everything, he immediately stopped me and said, no, you cannot criticize these people. And I said something to express some confusion in seeing the way that they were behaving. And he said, if they confuse you, he said, then stay in your room and do bhajan in there. He said, then don't mix with them. Don't become confused. Go on with your devotional activities. Don't mix with them if they confuse you. And at the same time, because of his exalted position, he was fighting with them very strongly, but demanding us to do so, and clearly at the same time indicating that we should show all respects to them. So it was more than I had the maturity to handle, or any of us. So it faded and nobody followed it up. But at that time I went around looking for different trees and tried to get together a taxi and go around, and I said to him, how will we find these trees? He said, the local people will tell you. So then I asked him later about that, what will the local people, and then he said, in typical sort of the contradictory nature of Vrindavan, he said, don't ask the local people, the local people will tell you lies. And then at the end of it I was thinking, I don't understand this place very well. But he was making the point that these trees should actually be protected because they were so exalted. So in the process of doing that, trying to not ask the local people and ask the local people and not disrespect the local people but see what they're doing and be aware of it and all these various apparent contradictions, I went around and found out some of the trees that were very well known, some of which are being taken care of and some of which are growing here and there. And amongst them I went to a place called Mansarovara, which I think anyone who's a knower of Vrindavan would have been. And Mansarovara, I brought two pictures here of the trees in Mansarovara. And the reason I went back in time like that was because this tree still exists. This is a Kadamba tree. I'll just place them here because it'll be difficult for them to stand. But these trees, these are pilu trees. And I think they've very much changed. They've been chopped and they've aged, and so they're not as mystical as they were at the time when we visited many years back. So Mansarovara is a very special place because it's a place of man. So man, it's a difficult word for us to translate. You could use the word anger. You could use the word contrary. You could use the word sulky. All of these words are part of a Westerner's understanding of this word man. But man is a mood, a bhav, a sentiment of Srimati Radhika when she is interrelating with Krishna in complete transcendental love. So all of her sentiments, just like, for example, if a young boy and a young girl are together and the young boy happens to look left at another beautiful young girl, the girl that he's with becomes very offended and she becomes sulky, proud, or angry in this way. But her interest is in her own self. She's been slighted by something that he has done. So she's feeling very hurt or angry with him. But this is not the nature of Srimati Radharani's transcendental man. Everything of Radharani's moods is for the pleasure of Krishna. There's not even one tiny atom of her being that has selfishness attached to it. She's the personification of Krishna's Ladini Shakti. So she's not a woman of this world. She's not somebody with ideal womanly qualities that we can all emulate and look up to and think, you should be like, or you should read about, because then you can be like. Not like Devahuti, not like even Lakshmi. She's the complete manifestation of love of Krishna in the most highest and most absolute form. So her man is a transcendental appearing sulkiness, contrariness, but it's meant to give and nourish pleasure and transcendental satisfaction of Krishna. So the stories of these different places, Mansarovara and so forth, they may vary according to the source with which you hear them. In the details, one person tells them slightly differently than another. But the essence is always the same. So once I had heard this story told in this particular way, that Srimati Radhika, the first time that she heard that Krishna had met with Chandravali. So Chandravali, as we know, is the counter girl friend of Krishna to Srimati Radhika. And it's not so insidious as that, as we would think in the material world, like Srimati Radhika's cousin is Chandravali. Chandrabanu is this brother of Brishabhanu Maharaj, and Chandravali is the daughter of Chandrabanu. So sometimes Krishna, he meets with one of the gopis, and sometimes he meets with another. And from the platform of tattva, or from the intellectual theoretical platform, we can understand that all of these gopis are all expansions of Srimati Radharani herself. So this is how amazing and wonderful the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are. That Radhika expands into all these various gopis, eternal personalities, all there meant to give satisfaction and pleasure to Krishna's senses and nothing else. This is the extraordinary nature of Vrindavan Dham. So Chandravali and Krishna meet, and Srimati Radharani becomes immersed in this contrary mood, this bhav of anger. And she leaves from Braj Dham, from Vrindavan, and she crosses the Jamuna. And she goes to a solitary place all by herself, and she's so angry with Krishna. And there she's sitting alone and crying and crying and crying in her deep anger that Krishna, he has met with another gopi. This means all of his words, oh, I love you so much, I always think of you. Just as sometimes Krishna, he will meet with one of the gopis, he'll meet with Chandravali, and he'll say, oh, I love you so much, my dear Radhika. And she'll say, what? And he, oh, I didn't mean that, I meant, and he's very charming. He'll try to talk himself out of making a great mistake of calling one of the gopis by a different name. And all of this enhancement of his pleasure, the gopis all take part in. So Radhika is there, and she's crying and crying and crying with her gopi friends. And Krishna comes, and now he will try everything possible to try to appease her. There are two types of man. There's one type of man is called Haituki man, and one is called Ahaituki man. Haituki means with a cause. So when there's no cause, it's like you could say, if you want to touch on a mundane comparison, just like if there's a misunderstanding, but there was actually, it's only a misunderstanding. That kind of man is very easy to break. Krishna will come, he will speak some sweet words to Srimati Radharani. She will pout and not look at him, and he will say so many wonderful things to her. And then he can break her mood, and then again they can enjoy together. But when there is actually a reason, Haitukiman, it is very deep and very strong, and Krishna cannot break it so easily. And sometimes he has to seek the friendship. He has to make friends with her friends to try to work out a way that they should talk on his behalf. And sometimes that works. But this time nothing worked. So he came there and he fell at her feet. And he said, "I'm so sorry, I don't know what you've heard, but whatever you have heard, it's certainly not true. I love only you." And Srimati Radharani doesn't want to look at him. She turns her head from him. And he says, "Please," and then he appeals to her gopi friends, "Please speak on my behalf. You know I love only Srimati Radhika. You please tell her, change her mind. She has misunderstood something. This is very difficult." And he would speak so many charming words to them, and even they tried to speak to her and convince her that Krishna, he's a very nice boy. You shouldn't become angry with him. He loves only you. And still, she will not look at him. She will not even speak to him. She has her head turned and her sari spread like this, so she can't even see him. And still, he begs. He gets down on his knees and he says so many things to her, please, and so many sweet words. But she does not move, not even an inch. And finally, he becomes completely defeated. She will not respond. So he gets up and very, very, very sadly, with great sadness of heart, he starts to walk away. And as he's walking away, then her gopi friends come and surround her and say, "You know, he's a very nice boy. And if you become so angry at him and you you disregard him in this way, you know he will go to Chandravali. And then you will be very, very sorry and you will cry so much. You must not become so angry with him." So she is still very much angry. But then some of her gopi friends go and they bring him back. And he comes back. And finally he comes and he places his head at her feet, on her feet. And when she feels the moisture of his tears of love touching her feet, then she gradually relents, and then she will change her mind and her mood, and Krishna can speak very sweetly to her, and then again she will turn in his direction and smile. So this is one way that Krishna breaks the man of Srimati Radharani, and Mansarovar is a place of this transcendental ecstasy. This mood of man is also a type of separation. We hear there are different types of separation between Radha and Krishna. So inconceivably, when Srimati Radharani goes into this transcendental state of man, she feels great separation from Krishna. But simultaneously, separation feeling brings great joy to Krishna as well. We see here that when somebody has a negative emotion, or a feeling of great loss, there's nothing really that can compensate. If a loved one dies, we cry and cry, and it's not as if our crying can bring them back. And when we have a negative feeling towards someone, it's negative and it's unhealthy, and it can also cause us ill health, and it's the cause of great mental disturbance and imbalance and so on and so forth. So then when we hear that in the transcendental realm such negative, so-called negative sentiments exist as separation, Mahaprabhu's mood of separation, we tend to label them as unhappy things. This is very unhappy. This is an unfortunate thing. But actually in Goloka Vrindavan, all these range of emotions that we have here, they all exist there. But they're all different forms of transcendental pleasure that are shared between the devotees and Krishna. This has to be understood so that we don't reserve our feelings when we're hearing about something that is very sad and think, oh, that sounds terrible, which would be the tendency if we're not aware of the transcendental nature of the moods and the aspects of Vrindavan. But sometimes Krishna, when Srimati Radharani becomes angry, he has other means, more playful means with which to break her mood. So one of them we can see here in this little tiny display, that sometimes what Krishna will do is that he will go away from her very despondent and unhappy, and then he will lie down under a tree and he will take some rest. So whilst he's lying there, he makes sure that his flute is well and truly visible. He'll tuck it in his belt and he'll leave it very clearly there, and he'll apparently fall asleep. And all the gopis together will join together and they'll see, ha, Krishna's over there. And I know what we can do to punish him. He has done this and this and this. We will steal his flute. And so together the gopis come very, very, very silently and quite playfully, as young girls would be. And they very, very quietly sneak up on Krishna, who is sleeping soundly. And they tell Srimati Radharani, you go and take that flute, because if we can take his flute and break it, then he can't disturb us anymore. Because whenever he plays his flute, he agitates our minds so much we can't go on with our household duties. We can't keep our composure. He's so troublesome in all of Braj. Everyone criticizes us because of our attraction for him. So if we take his flute, then everything will be stopped. So Srimati Radharani, sometimes she will crawl up very, very quietly, sometimes holding her bangles or bracelets so that they make no jingling sound. And she'll come very, very close to Krishna, and very, very gracefully and delicately she'll place her hand on the flute and slip the flute out from in Krishna's belt and tuck it sometimes into her braid so it can't be seen. And then she'll crawl back again. And sometimes the other gopis will say, now that was so easy to do, why don't we take his jewelry next? And Srimati Radharani, out of love for Krishna, will say, no, 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 that will embarrass him. We should not take his jewelry. We will just take the flute. And he is there sleeping, supposedly sleeping, and meanwhile he's feeling very, very pleased with himself as he hears their furtive, loving words, because this is what he wanted. He wanted to break her from her mood of anger. And so when she feels like, ah, I have done something now, I have retaliated by stealing the flute, then she becomes relaxed and happy. And then he immediately wakes up and, oh, where is my flute? And they all say, we don't know where your flute is. You must have dropped it somewhere. You go here and there. You're so restless. You're always walking in with the cows. You must have lost your flute. And Krishna plays along with them in this loving way, with this transcendental enjoyment. And he will express that he thinks that perhaps they've stolen his flute. And they say, no, no, we haven't taken your flute. And then one of the gopis or another will indicate with her eyes, because so many things take place, so much communication takes place simply through the eyes and eyebrows. You can see in India, if you spend some time in India, you watch, and so much takes place just through the eyebrows, or that means so many things, or a means so many things. And for Westerners, you know, who, if you say yes, you've got to nod your head, and everything's very expanded and very direct. But in India is quite a different language. So the language of Braj, and of course of the transcendental pastimes of Braj, is even more subtle and even more transcendentally refined. So with an arched eyebrow, it can be seen that somebody might be the possessor of the flute. And then from there, then so many transcendental pastimes ensue. So I've been asked not to talk for very long, so we won't tell any of those stories. But I would like to put this back, and it would be nice if the devotees would come up and they, by hearing, as I said, these are very simple, but if you hear the pastime, and then you look at something. This is the proper way to go into Braj also. You hear something about Giriraj, and then you go and look at Giriraj, and when you look, it's true of anything. Just like if somebody walked into this room and sat down here, and they just sit with everybody, and nobody knows who they are, and if somebody whispers to somebody else, do you know that's the governor? You know, and he comes from so-and-so, and he's so pious, and he's so this and that, and he has so many children, then when you see him, you see so much more than just a man who is sitting there. So likewise, we have to hear the pastimes of Krishna, and then when we go to the places, the hearing combines with what you see, and then later, when you're somewhere in another situation and you see something, it brings back to memory the whole impression. The hearing returns along with what you can visibly see. So in the same way with these little displays, the idea is that by hearing something, then when you see something, it can remind you of the fullness of the pastimes themselves. You're here. All right. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.